This is CNN Breaking News.
We want to welcome our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. We're following breaking news. Tonight, there are new and very ominous indicators that the United States is now plunging into the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. In addition to the rising death toll and case count, most states are now reporting alarming spikes in infections, 21 of them seeing all-time highs as hospitalizations around the country are soaring. But President Trump is again insisting the country is doing just fine as he campaigned in North Carolina, where daily cases just peaked. Mr. Trump ignoring the evidence and downplaying fatalities as the CDC projects another 23,000 Americans may die by the end of election week. President, watching all of this unfold right now, let's go to the White House first. We're watching this very closely over there. CNN's Caitlin Collins is joining us right now with the very latest. What are you learning, Caitlin?
Well, Wolf, you're seeing the president wrap up his rally there in Florida. He's headed to Georgia next, and he's bringing with him this message that he's been pushing for several weeks now, but is now doubling down on it, insisting that we are rounding the corner when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, even though, as you noted, we are seeing cases surge to record highs in some states here in the United States. And we're also learning that was something that the White House has been telling us for the last several months, that the president is tested every single day, is not true.
President Trump and Joe Biden battling in battleground states today, one night after going head-to-head but not face-to-face in town halls.
I didn't watch Sleepy Joe last night. I just wanted to see what he looked like.
In Florida, Trump making his pitch to seniors as polls show Biden is leading nationwide with voters 65 and older.
Seniors will be the first in line for the vaccine. We are rounding the turn. I say that all the time. Some of the media doesn't like hearing it. But I say it all the time, we're rounding that turn.
President Trump also holding a campaign rally in Georgia after spreading misinformation about mask wearing during last night's town hall in Miami.
Hey, Dr. Fauci said don't wear a mask, right?
At first, but then everybody agreed.
Well, I don't know, then he changed his mind. But then you have a report coming out 2 days ago that 85% of the people wearing masks
catch it. I looked at that report.
The CDC report Trump is referring to did not find that 85% of people who wore a mask got coronavirus. It wasn't even about masks, and instead found that people who got COVID-19 were twice as likely to have reported eating at a restaurant than those who did not. The president is sowing doubt about wearing a mask, even as former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was recently released from intensive care after his coronavirus diagnosis, admitted he was wrong not to wear a mask at the White House.
It was a mistake. You know, I was led to believe that, you know, all the people that I was interacting with at the White House had been tested, and it gave you a false sense of security.
Trump told NBC News he's not tested on a daily basis like staff claimed, and that he can't remember if he was tested before his debate with Joe Biden.
I don't know. I don't even remember. I test all the time. Again, the doctors do it. I don't ask them. I test all the time.
Last night, Trump quickly denounced white supremacy, but stepped on his own message when he danced around condemning the conspiracy group QAnon.
I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about
it. They believe it is a satanic
like
cult run by the deep
study
state.
The subject.
Trump was also pressed on why he retweeted an absurd conspiracy that Osama bin Laden's death was a hoax and President Obama and Joe Biden had SEAL Team 6 killed, a baseless theory debunked by a Navy SEAL who was there.
That was a retweet. That was an opinion of somebody, and that was a retweet. I'll put it out there. People can decide for themselves.
I
don't take a position.
You're not like someone's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever.
Joe Biden struck a more subdued tone during his own town hall as he criticized the president and sidestepped questions about expanding the Supreme Court.
But don't voters have a right to know where you stand?
They do have a right to know where I stand. They'll have a right to know where I stand before they vote.
According to television ratings from the dueling town halls, more people watched Biden than the ratings-obsessed president who went after NBC's Savannah Guthrie for her tough questioning.
It's a nice pleasurable evening as I have somebody going totally crazy last night. And I told you that. Another evening in paradise, I call it.
And Wolf, the president going after Savannah Guthrie there, as we are now learning something that his former chief of staff has said privately about him. That's John Kelly, of course, who was here before the president's last chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney. But now CNN is reporting that John Kelly has privately told friends this about the president. And obviously, it's not flattering. The depths of his dishonesty is just astounding to me. The dishonesty, this transactional nature of every relationship, though it's more pathetic than anything else. John Kelly went on to say he is the most flawed person I have ever met in my life. That's what John Kelly, who worked for the president for a little under 2 years as his top aide, is apparently telling people about what he thinks about the president privately. Wolf.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff indeed. All right, Caitlin Collins at the White House for us. Thank you very much. Let's check in with CNN's Brian Todd. He's also working this story for us. Brian, today it was confirmed more than 8 million confirmed coronavirus cases here in the United States over these past several months. That's more than any other country in the world.
Right, Wolf, it's really just not going well anywhere in the country right now. Just a short time ago, also, the president's own Surgeon General, Dr. Jerome Adams, warned about the outbreak in Wisconsin, saying that Wisconsin has positivity rates of over 10% and that the state is, quote, going in the wrong direction. And this comes just one day before President Trump plans to hold a large rally in Janesville, Wisconsin. This is one of several states just setting terrifying records every day.
Hospital beds on the move in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with hospitals pushing capacity. Officials in New Mexico say many coronavirus patients there need to be transferred from one hospital to another throughout the state. And tonight, they're worried about having enough people to take care of them.
Our hospital leaders' greatest concern today is staffing up those beds. They point out that, you know, the healthcare workforce that's been fighting valiantly against COVID in New Mexico, they're getting tired. There's some people who've stepped back.
Cases have spiked to such an extent in New Mexico that the governor is telling people flat out, don't leave your home if you don't have to. The virus, she says, is winning.
This is the most serious emergency that New Mexico has ever faced.
Wisconsin is also seeing horrific spikes, and officials say many new cases are tied directly to virus spreads in prisons and veterans' homes, like the King facility in Waupaca County.
There are 52 members currently in quarantine, and there are 25 staff members currently out of the work unit with positive COVID tests.
Wisconsin and New Mexico are two of 10 states that just reported their single highest day of new cases ever. The numbers are daunting all the way around. The U.S. topped 60,000 new cases in a single day for the first time since August 14th. 32 states today trending up in new cases. The U.S. just passed 8 million total cases of this virus. And America's top experts are very worried about the months ahead.
As we move towards the winter and the weather is getting colder, people will have fewer and fewer opportunities to be outdoors and to be able to just naturally social distance. We're going to be creating opportunities, more opportunities for this virus to spread. It is a dangerous moment in history.
Experts say this year, even with so many Americans desperate for some kind of celebration, holidays will have to be scaled back to combat the virus. The CDC has just issued new guidelines for how Americans can stay safe at Thanksgiving. Among them, assess the infection rates in your community. Consider postponing or canceling activities. Think about having outdoor dinners, weather permitting, or hosting virtual dinners. And limit the number of people at any gathering. Mask wearing and distancing are more important than ever, America's leading voice on infectious disease says, and he's becoming impatient with people who aren't doing those things.
So if you think that by getting infected and saying poo-pooing the prevention modalities, that you're living in a vacuum and you're not, no, you're becoming part of the problem.
But Dr. Fauci emphasized that it is still not too late to turn the tide for what will happen with the virus this fall and winter if Americans act responsibly, if state and local officials take the right public health measures. And he says you can do all this without shutting the country down. We should also note, Wolf, we found out a short time ago, Dr. Fauci is going to be among the first people to see the data, the critical data that's going to tell the country whether one of those coronavirus vaccines is safe. He is going to be among the first top experts to look at that critical data in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, certainly. We trust Dr. Fauci and his team very, very seriously. Brian Todd reporting for us. Thank you very much. I want to bring in our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, for analysis. Sanjay, as you heard, the country has now surpassed 8 million confirmed cases of the virus, with more than 63,000 new infections here in the U.S. just yesterday. The head of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, just told me in the last hour he expects the daily death toll to start rising as well. Just how dangerous, Sanjay, are these high numbers that we're seeing explode right now?
Well, you know, it's very concerning. Well, obviously, if you're starting off this wave going into the colder weather at this high a level of viral transmission, it's just a lot that you all of a sudden can build on. You know, if you're starting at a lower level, it takes a while to get into that sort of exponential growth. Starting at, you know, 50, 60,000 newly infected people a day, if they're each potentially spreading it to two or three, you can see how significant a number that can reach quickly. Well, if one of the big concerns is just hospitals, right? I mean, these are some of the same conversations you and I were having back in March and April. Hospital bed capacity is something that, you know, hospital cities are looking at all over the country right now. And, you know, typically around this time of year, it's around 60% or so full. If we could show the map here, but in many, many states around the country, hospital occupancy is already quite high. So if you're already high and going into flu season, going into coronavirus season, or worsening coronavirus season, I should say, that's a concern, Wolf. I mean, that's why a lot of planning is going on in these communities now to say, what happens if we are starting to run out of space? So Wisconsin's building these tents, you know, these field hospitals. It's dangerous, Wolf, and a lot of planning now going into place to try and avert some of the more tragic problems here.
Because as you know, the U.S. Surgeon General today warned that Wisconsin clearly going in the wrong direction, the state's positivity rate nearly 23%. So what would you say to anyone thinking of attending one of the president's rallies, and he's going to be in Wisconsin tomorrow?
Well, you know, let me just remind you why positivity rate is such an important thing to look at. So positivity rate of 23%. Out of 100 people that were tested, 23 came back positive. What does that mean? Why is that so concerning? Well, that means that if you're getting that many coming back positive, that means you're missing a lot more people who aren't getting tested. It's kind of like if you go fishing with the net. Put the net down, you grab a bunch of fish, you think, oh, I grabbed a bunch of fish. There must be a lot more fish down there. It's the same sort of thing with positivity rate. So why is it dangerous then in a community that has high positivity rate? Well, you ask yourself, if you go out, what is the likelihood you're going to come in contact with someone who is carrying the virus? It's much higher if you have a positivity rate of over 20%, like we're seeing in Wisconsin. So you go to a rally, you're next to people, closely clustered, longer than 15 minutes. If people aren't masked, they're putting that virus into the air. Outside, safer than inside, but that's still a lot of virus within a rally or any kind of gathering like that. And that's the big concern. So even aside from anything else that's going on, in the middle of a pandemic, bringing large groups of people together is a bad idea, Wolf. It's been a bad idea for months now. We know this, and the numbers are even worse now than they were before.
Yeah, even if it's outside, you should engage in social distancing and certainly wear a mask to protect yourself and protect everyone else. Pfizer now says, Sanjay, that it will request an emergency use authorization for its potential coronavirus vaccine by the third week in November if it gets positive data. No guarantee, but potentially the third week in November. What hurdles does this vaccine need to pass?
You know, it's basically two hurdles, and I'll preface by saying nobody knows what the data is yet except for this independent entity known as the Data Monitoring Safety Board. That's ethicists, statisticians. We had a chance to talk to one of them. Nobody, Dr. Fauci, the companies, the FDA, nobody else sees the data quite yet. What they're looking for is basically say if this is effective, at least 50% effective, this vaccine, and if 2 months of safety data don't show significant adverse effects. If it crosses those two hurdles, and Pfizer, again, they haven't seen the data, but they anticipate by middle of November that the data will be there, and if it's positive, they're going to go ahead and apply for this emergency use authorization. That's sort of been the plan all along. But I want to, again, emphasize, as promising as things have been, and I'm quite optimistic about it, as are many people, we still haven't seen the data. We've got to see that this vaccine actually works and isn't having adverse effects.
Got to make sure it's effective, but also got to make sure it's safe and the side effects are really, really minimal. All right, Sanjay, thank you very, very much, Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Always joining us with his expertise. Just ahead, Joe Biden now says President Trump is, quote, living in a dream world after repeatedly claiming the coronavirus is about to disappear. And later, we'll have more on the president's refusal to condemn a dangerous conspiracy theory labeled a domestic terror threat by the FBI. Joe Biden is taking his presidential campaign to the battleground state of Michigan in a bid to rebuild what's called the Blue Wall. President Trump shattered back in 2016. CNN's Jessica Dean is tracking the Biden campaign for us. She's joining us from Michigan right now. So Biden is going directly after the president, Jessica, in very, very tough words.
Yes, very pointed way this afternoon, Wolf. Joe Biden making health care and the Affordable Care Act really center to his closing argument here in Michigan. He and his campaign believing that has a through line to so many issues, including Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to the Supreme Court, Republicans' efforts to dismantle the ACA, and then, of course, the coronavirus and Trump's response to the coronavirus. Take a listen.
He's still living in a dream world. He keeps telling us that this virus is going to disappear like a miracle. He said, I think last night in his town hall, I didn't have the pleasure of hearing it. I was doing one myself. He said, we have turned the corner. As my grandfather Finnegan might say, we were here, he said, he's gone around the bend. Turn the corner. My Lord. It's not disappearing. In fact, it's on the rise again. It's getting worse, as predicted. We all know the terrible price this nation has paid.
Meantime, at his town hall last night in Philadelphia, Joe Biden talking about a question he's dodged for weeks now, and that's whether he supports packing the Supreme Court. He has said that he doesn't want to give that answer because it's a distraction. He said last night he promised to give his answer on that before Election Day. Meantime, we move ever closer to Election Day. I'm here at a drive-in event. It's all about voter engagement, making sure people turn out to the polls. We learned today, Wolf, that Vice President Biden's perhaps biggest surrogate out there, former President Barack Obama, will hit the campaign trail for him in Philadelphia next week.
18 days to go until November 3rd, Election Day, but millions, more than 20 million Americans already have voted. All right, Jessica, thank you very much. Let's bring in our political correspondent, Abby Phillip, and CNN political commentator, Bakari Sellers. He's the author of the new book, My Vanishing Country, a memoir. You know, Abby, CNN has learned that the former White House chief of staff, retired General John Kelly, has told friends that President Trump, in his words, is the most flawed person I have ever met in my life. Given these very strong feelings, why won't the president's former chief of staff simply come out publicly to explain to the American people why he's so concerned about his former boss's character?
Yeah, I think that is the question, and it's one that really I don't have a great answer to. It's not clear to me why John Kelly, who does not have a good relationship with this president and hasn't for a very, very long time, why he won't just simply say publicly what he's saying privately. The only thing that I can gather from my understanding of how John Kelly is as a person from people who know him is that he is a kind of a circumspect person publicly. He doesn't want to get deeply involved in the political drama, but at the same time, he's obviously painting a very dire picture of this person that he used to work for. And I think it stands to reason that he, if he felt so strongly about it in private, he ought to let the public know publicly, because he's one of the people, one of the few people who has been so close to this president, worked for him for many years. And I think his opinion is important for voters to know as they're going to the polls.
So many of the president's former advisors are saying similar things. You know, Bakari, we've also just learned that former President Obama will make his first campaign stop for Joe Biden next Wednesday in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania being a key battleground state. This marks a long-awaited moment for the Biden campaign, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, and I know that Joe Biden has to feel amazing to have his former boss out on the campaign trail. Look, Barack Obama is the most popular politician in the entire country. He's the big dog. And so when you roll him out, I mean, it's going to be energy abound for this campaign. It's going to be new wind beneath its sails if it needs it. Barack Obama is someone who's going to pitch a message much like Joe Biden of unifying this country, of bringing this country together, whether or not you're in North Carolina or whether or not you're in Ohio or Pennsylvania. He's someone a lot like John Kelly knows Donald Trump, Barack Obama knows Joe Biden, and he will be able to speak to his character, he'll be able to speak to his fortitude and who he is, and he'll also be able to talk about a vision for this country moving forward. I'm so excited about having Barack Obama on the trail. The Republican Party doesn't have anything like it. I mean, Larry Hogan had to vote for Ronald Reagan today.
Yeah, the governor of Maryland, and he made a point by saying he was voting for Ronald Reagan, a symbolic statement indeed. And we do know that President Obama has a huge following out there to get out the vote, which will be so, so critical in this election. You know, Abby, only 18 days to go. We're seeing a president very much on the defensive right now. What are the locations of President Trump's campaign stops revealed to you about how his team is viewing this race with only a few days left?
Well, I think probably the only thing that you need to know about how the president's team is viewing this race is where he is tonight, where he's heading right as we speak, Macon, Georgia. He's going to Georgia to try to defend that state that he won the last time around. That should be a state that he should be able to win this time around if he were in a strong position. He was also campaigning in North Carolina, another state. He should be able to, at least if he were in a strong position, he as a Republican, he ought to be able to win that state pretty easily without investing resources in the last 20 days. This is a president who is defending a map and a very narrow path to victory. And that narrow path may very well require that he wins North Carolina. It will also require that he wins Florida, which is a state that he's been campaigning in recently as well. And so the Trump campaign, despite what the president is saying, knows that this is a map that is not trending in their direction. They're not in a position to expand the map. They are only trying to defend what they did last time around. And I think that defensive territory is actually a much broader territory than they would like it to be at this point.
Important indeed. Art, Abby, Phillip, and Bakari Sellers, guys, thanks very much. An important and quick programming note for our viewers. Tune in this weekend for an inside look at the Trump presidency from those who worked for the president. Jake Tapper, CNN special report, The Insiders, a warning from former Trump officials. That will air Sunday, 9 p.m. And midnight, 9 p.m. and midnight Eastern, right here on CNN, right after our special edition of The Situation Room. Just ahead, we'll have more on President Trump's embrace of yet another dangerous conspiracy group, QAnon, which the FBI calls a domestic terror threat. And later, Congressman Adam Schiff is standing by to join me live here in The Situation Room. We'll discuss a new investigation into a potential Russian disinformation campaign targeting the Biden family. We'll be right back. Anti-extremist organizations are sounding the alarm after President Trump refused to condemn QAnon, a conspiracy group that's been labeled a domestic terror threat by the FBI. Let's continue the discussion with the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Let me remind you and our viewers what the president said about this dangerous group last night. Watch this.
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about it.
They believe it is
if
a satanic
like
cult run by the deep state.
He's clearly not condemning this conspiracy theory. The president of the United States actually encouraging a totally insane movement out there. Is he pouring fuel on the fire, Jonathan?
Yes. You know, Wolf, as I said last night, as soon as I saw that, it is shockingly irresponsible that President Trump refused to disavow QAnon, which, as you said, is a dangerous and unhinged, hateful conspiracy theory that promotes anti-Semitism. It's inspired its followers to commit multiple acts of violence. And look, the most generous thing I can say here tonight is that claiming ignorance is just absolutely unacceptable. When you're the president of the United States, you just can't credibly say, I don't know who David Duke is, or I don't know who the Proud Boys are, or I don't know what QAnon is. Particularly when the president's on record as saying he watches cable television news all the time. I mean, obviously he knows exactly who these people are, Wolf. And if you're not willing to call out a domestic terror threat, a group that wants to cause violence to the homeland, I mean, that's dereliction of duty at best.
Yeah, the other day he said this. He said Well, I don't know much about the movement other than I understand they like me very much, which I appreciate. So he knows at least that much, and it's pretty shocking that he simply can't condemn this organization. Tell us why they're so dangerous.
Well, look, QAnon started in about 2017 on a service called 4chan. And again, it is a sort of a shadowy conspiracy movement. I think their followers are probably in the tens of thousands, but they believe there's a deep state conspiracy, again, run by a cabal of pedophiles, and their lunatic rantings have sort of moved from the sewers of the internet, Wolf, into mainstream politics, in large part because of moments last night. You know, at the ADL, we track extremists. And I can tell you, on QAnon boards today, we watch them. And these extremists believe last night was a huge win. They think it was a win because simply being discussed on a platform like, you know, a broadcast news program, to them feels like a victory. And when President Trump claims he doesn't know what they are, but actually states what they believe is their core purpose, fighting imaginary satanic pedophiles, they think he was showing them code. He is approving of them. And that's why they feel emboldened today. And look, like I said a moment ago, whether it was a QAnon enthusiast trying to attack a pizza parlor in DC or other acts of violence, these people are dangerous and they don't deserve to be dignified by the President of the United States or anyone in public life.
Have you or others, leaders in the ADL, actually communicated to the White House to express this concern?
Again and again, we've spoken to people at the highest levels of government, publicly and privately, to explain that in order to eliminate this kind of threat, you've got to denounce it clearly and cogently. But I must say, I mean, I've never had a moment like this before that I've seen in public life. There are plenty of responsible politicians on both sides of the aisle. But when the president himself signals that this is somehow normal, that it's just simply a group he's not aware of, I've got to say it sends them a signal. They feel emboldened by this. They already think, Wolf, that the president's retweeting their memes, right? And suggesting they're somehow normal. It is giving them the entree they're looking for into American public life.
All right, Jonathan, thanks very much. Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, appreciate your joining us. We're going to stay on top of this story for our viewers. Just ahead, I'll speak live with Congressman Adam Schiff about a new probe into a potential Russian disinformation campaign targeting Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Plus, multiple states are now reporting a huge surge in early voting. Will 2020 set a record for turnout? We'll be right back. Federal authorities, including the FBI, are investigating whether recently published emails that purport to detail the business dealings of Joe Biden's son, Hunter, are connected to an ongoing Russian disinformation effort targeting the Biden campaign in the days leading up to the election. Let's discuss with the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Adam Schiff. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. Does it surprise you at all that this information Rudy Giuliani is peddling very well could be connected to some sort of Russian government disinformation campaign?
Well, we know that this whole smear on Joe Biden comes from the Kremlin. That's been clear for well over a year now that they've been pushing this false narrative about the vice president and his son. And, you know, the idea that the president, that the White House counsel and others were made aware that Giuliani was being used by Russian intelligence and using Russian intelligence in the sense of meeting with an agent of the Kremlin and pushing out this Kremlin false narrative. The idea that they were knowing and still on the floor of the Senate during the impeachment trial, pushing this Kremlin narrative is pretty breathtaking. But I guess at this point, we can't be shocked by anything this administration does, no matter how craven. But clearly, the origins of this whole smear are from the Kremlin. And the president is only too happy to have Kremlin help in trying to amplify it.
It's not like Rudy Giuliani is peddling this information in a vacuum, Congressman. Take a look at this picture of the president in the old Oval Office holding up a copy of the New York Post touting this conspiracy theory. It's made its way all the way to the commander-in-chief with a big smile on his face.
Yes. I think we know who the driving force behind this smear has been all along, and it's been the president and the Kremlin. The Kremlin has an obvious interest in denigrating Joe Biden. They want Donald Trump to win. They recognize he's a weak president. He's been utterly unwilling to stand up to Putin and other autocrats. He has diminished NATO. He has criticized and weakened our alliance with our transatlantic partners. He's been the gift that doesn't stop giving for the Kremlin. So clearly they want to help him. So they want to denigrate the vice president. The intelligence community has made that abundantly clear. And this particular smear, though, has also been acknowledged to come from the Kremlin. And there it is in the Oval Office, another wonderful propaganda coup for Vladimir Putin, seeing the president of the United States holding up a newspaper promoting Kremlin propaganda. It's really incredible.
The Washington Post, as you saw, is reporting that when the president was actually warned of concerns about Giuliani and where he was getting all this information, warned by U.S. intelligence, law enforcement authorities, the president simply shrugged his shoulders and responded, "That's Rudy." How much is that part of the problem here, that the president, at least according to this reporting in the Washington Post, doesn't seem to care?
Well, it's a big part of the problem. And we know for a long time, look, Rudy Giuliani doesn't run the president. The president runs Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani is doing the president's bidding. He was doing the president's bidding late last year and earlier this year in Ukraine. He was doing the president's bidding when he was meeting with an agent of the Kremlin. He was doing the president's bidding when he was pushing out this smear and trying to get the Ukrainians to push out the smear of his opponent, because he was deathly afraid of being exactly where we are right now, which is less than 3 weeks from the election, losing badly to Joe Biden. But the fact that he would continue to do it, I guess at this point, shouldn't surprise us. But this is the story of Donald Trump, utter unwillingness to stand up to the Kremlin, a willingness to use their help no matter how dishonest and disreputable, a willingness to undermine our own elections by getting Kremlin help and amplifying it. And there's only one remedy at this point, and that's to vote him out.
Have you, as a member of the Gang of Eight, the top leadership in the Congress, the Senate, and the House, and members of the Intelligence Committee, have you been formally briefed on what the Russians are up to right now in trying to peddle this kind of information?
Well, I was in the Intelligence Committee today to see what the latest was, and frankly, we haven't gotten much from the intelligence community very recently, which concerns me. They have, at times, some of the leadership, like the Director Ratcliffe, not been very forthcoming in terms of the intelligence on the Russian threat and been promoting this false equivalence with other countries. So I wish I could tell you more, Wolf. I wish the intelligence community was at liberty to tell the public more. But we do know this. The Russians are once again actively involved in trying to denigrate the vice president. Donald Trump is helping them, and we know that they are amplifying the president's misinformation about absentee ballots. This is another gift the president is giving the Russians. Unlike 2016, when the Russians had to make up this stuff, they now can simply use the president's own false statements and amplify them. It is extraordinary, Wolf, that a president of the United States is telling his own citizens and the rest of the world that America can't hold a free and fair election. The Kremlin just has to push out that false narrative by the president of the United States.
Congressman Adam Schiff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Wolf.
All right, just ahead, more than 20 million general election ballots have already been cast here in the United States as more states report record increases in early voting. We'll be right back. With just 18 days to go until the election here in the United States, states across the country are seeing huge turnout for early voting, and we're learning more about how many Americans have already cast their ballots. CNN's senior White House correspondent Pamela Brown is tracking all of this for us.
I see it as probably being one of the most important elections in my entire lifetime going forward.
And it seems she's not alone. Not by a long shot. More than 20 million Americans have already voted, according to data from 45 states in Washington, D.C., analyzed by CNN, Edison, and Catalyst.
Yes.
In North Carolina, these long lines on the first day of early voting Thursday were the first indicator of huge turnout in the Tar Heel State. The State Board of Elections is tweeting that more than 333,000 voters cast ballots on day one. That is believed to be a new record, beating the 304,000 ballots cast on the first day in 2016. In Georgia, they've seen a 62% increase in early in-person voters compared to the same time 4 years ago. A similar story in Tennessee, where early voting in person or by mail started yesterday, and they've already seen a 91% increase compared to 2016.
I think more of the millennial and younger are a little bit more aware and maybe are more wanting to get out there and vote and are more aware of the issues.
In Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State says she expects that full results for mail-in ballots won't be available until the Friday after Election Day.
Sometimes you might have an omission or an illegible postmark, or as long as they were received 3 days later, they could be counted.
And in Michigan today, the Secretary of State there announcing that people can't carry guns on Election Day at polling places, saying in a statement she's, quote, committed to ensuring all eligible Michigan citizens can freely exercise their fundamental right to vote without fear of threats, intimidation, or harassment.
I don't feel he's been treated fairly by the Democrats at all.
In Florida, the edge Democrats had in voter registration is narrowing. New data from the state shows about 134,000 more Democrats are registered to vote than Republicans, which is down from 2016, when they led by about 327,000. And in California...
You know what? You can't just trust anybody right now.
That frustration, part of a week-long Dropbox drama, which today appears to have ended. The Secretary of State announcing this afternoon the California Republican Party agreed to no longer deploy these unofficial ballot drop boxes, which were found in at least four counties. A move the former Republican governor Arnold Schwarzenegger called...
It's a stupid thing they're doing right now with these ballot boxes.
And Wolf, in Florida, election officials, they are taking steps to remove ex-felons who owe court debts from the voter rolls. Of course, this comes after a Democratic-led effort to raise millions of dollars to pay off those court debt, so those ex-felons can vote after a ruling earlier this year. But now we're learning through this email obtained by CNN that election officials are taking steps to remove those ex-felons who owe debt from the voter rolls.
All right, Pamela Brown, thank you very much. And we'll have more news right after this. I'll be back for a special edition of The Situation Room tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern. Until then, thanks for watching. Aaron Burnett on Front starts right now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.